Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, February 2nd, 2018. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Michael Shore from I-24 and the Young Turks will be joining us to look back on this week that was and the memo released that will be. Also on the program, we go way back. Old Matt Binder will be here with us today to discuss his new podcast and all of the horrible things that are going on online. Meanwhile, Republicans set to release the memo stating that Republicans at the FBI are biased against Republicans. ICE continues its rampage, coming to a train, bus, or store near you. And has Paul Manafort's number one, Rick Gates, flipped? Trump's Department of Labor scrubs their own report, which shows their new rules will lead to billions of dollars in wage theft in restaurants. A federal judge in Florida fines Florida's disenfranchisement of convicted felony voters unconstitutional. Meanwhile, Pennsylvania Republicans are in contempt as SCOTUS contemplates a stay in the Pennsylvania redistricting case. Yeah. And as the Medicaid assault begins, Trump prepares to attack subsidized housing. And this is pleasant. White House looking for more ways to strike North Korea. And lastly, of course, because why not? The CDC is cutting its epidemic prevention by 80% because the funds aren't there. Enjoy, ladies and gentlemen. Enjoy that Ebola. All this and more on today's show. Your mic is back.
I'm good.
There you go. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, all that and more on today's program. It is Friday. It is another Friday in the era of Trump and Trump Republicans and Republicans. I've just repeated myself over and over again. Just a reminder, this program is made possible by our members. So I want to thank our members. You make this show, the free show, possible. And of course, as you know, we say thank you to you by offering you hours more content a week. Actually, I mean, close to a day. Couple hours, almost a couple hours more a day. Jesus. And when we started this program, it was supposed to be 50 minutes of extra material every day. No, and I don't think that we have done 50 minutes in over, I don't know, a year or two.
No. I think a light day is an hour and 10.
But that said, you can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Of course, you can give us a review on iTunes. That always helps. If you partake of coffee, you've got to try justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. We'll have more to say, of course. Always check out Michael's show, TMBS, on mostly on Tuesdays, and Jamie's Patreon, sort of like a blog, I guess you would call it, right? A paid
that is
periodical.
Accurate.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Check it out.
All right, folks, we got a bunch of clips here. Let's start with this whole memo thing. As you know, Devin Nunes. And Devin Nunes is a fascinating character in this. No, I have now, it seems like, three conversations on a daily basis where someone says, like, I don't get what Devin Nunes is doing. And I don't think it's possible. We'll talk to Michael Schur about this. He may have a better sense. But I don't think it's possible to really know from the outside. But he seems to be hell-bent on trying to, I don't know, do what? To discredit what things that Mueller will ultimately find in this completely witch hunt of an investigation, which apparently set out to just simply besmirch and start World War III with Russia and has now seemingly mutated into an investigation about crimes committed by the administration.
Mueller wants World War III.
There you go. And today, Devin Nunes, his dream of releasing his first fan fiction piece is going to come true. He wrote a memo based upon classified documents that much of which he has not seen, is my understanding. He's heard about them secondhand. He has written this memo. The members of the House Intelligence Committee, the Republicans, I should say, voted to release the memo. Donald Trump has 5 days, which ends, I believe, this afternoon, Friday, in which to stop the memo from being released. It appears that he will not. There seems to be some concern within the White House that this memo doesn't do what everybody thinks it's going to do. But rather may, in fact, implicate members of the Trump campaign. Nevertheless, those five at Fox are dutifully beginning their assault. And let me make this clear. I'm not a fan of the FBI. I'm not a fan of the CIA. I would love to see reform of both these agencies. I would have loved to have seen 702 not be reauthorized. I would love to see all sorts of things that has happened since 9/11 rolled back. Make no mistake about this. This is not about reform of the FBI. Making sure that the FBI is loyal to Donald Trump is not a reform of any measure whatsoever.
It's reform you can believe in.
All civil libertarians want is
that's what they want.
An FBI and a DOJ that's going to be loyal to me.
I think UEP Newton would support me in a certain sense today. He had found that the FBI was very unfair.
All right, so here is Fox News working overtime to come up with a metaphor for what's going on.
I don't think the president's trying to undermine anything. I think Congress is doing oversight, and that's what the job of Congress is. You also said that the FBI doesn't want it out. Of course they don't want it out because it's very embarrassing to the FBI. And all of a sudden, Juan Williams trusts law enforcement. No. I just want the record to show that for the last year, you've said the law enforcement needs to have body cameras on them. And, we have to look out for bias in law enforcement. Now we actually have evidence of bias in law enforcement. And you don't want to know about it, Juan.
Jesse.
When has the media not wanted more information?
Jesse, I
always thought you as a journalist would want more.
Yes, Jesse, Mark. I don't know. You're on such weak ground. I understand why you want to do some kind of personal
attack.
Pause
it for 1 second. Can we just roll it back a little bit? Because right now, in a basement somewhere, probably in Long Island, there's an aged Fox News commentator trying desperately to get Dennis Miller to come back on his podcast. And Jesse Waters has now graduated from making fun of Chinese people who don't speak English to adopting certain Bill O'Reilly flourishes. Watch his right hand as he finishes his little segue. You ready? You ready for this?
They actually have evidence of bias in law enforcement, and you don't want to know about it, Juan.
Jesse.
When has the media not wanted more information?
Here it comes.
Jesse, I
always
know.
Thought you as a journalist would want more.
Yes.
Nah, there it is! It's the...
I don't know. You're...
The cupping of the I will want more. Serve that up
he
there.
Is. Look at that smug little smile. He is so pleased with himself.
He is so happy.
Like a baby that just took a shit.
He has made a metaphor between the idea that maybe you shouldn't willy-nilly release only one report purporting to have classified information versus videos that come out of police officers shooting unarmed black people.
Black people commit a lot of muggings. Nothing classified about that.
There you go.
It's a great point, Jesse.
Great. You're on such weak ground. I understand why you want to do some kind of personal attack on me, but let
That's
me just
not
say...
personal.
Talk
about, your words against
about police in the streets
right.
and black communities. I'm not talking about the FBI looking at our politicians.
If there is a biased
the
cop
president.
Patrolling a black neighborhood that doesn't like black people,
oh my God.
Wouldn't you suspect
are you
that black cop? So
are
if
you?
There's a biased FBI agent that doesn't like
Holy
Donald
smokes.
Trump and he's overseeing the investigation,
Holy smokes.
Wouldn't you question
I tell
that
you what,
too?
I tell you what, maybe then you should
One.
Go back and look at the newspapers
That's
from
a great
yesterday.
Point.
There you go. You know, Jesse yeah, Waters does have this quality about him where he's like, I can't believe I'm saying this stuff. I'm getting paid for it.
Yeah, he has some vague self-awareness of how stupid he is. But Juan Williams is interesting because Juan Williams is like, you know, when I first started this gig, I could kind of like, when it was less overt, I could do this. And
oh,
now like we're getting
remember,
to the point.
You don't remember when Juan Williams joined Fox.
What
I
was
do.
He like?
Oh, well, I mean, he went from NPR to saying, I need to make some cash.
Right, no doubt.
And he would go on, and he was kissing a lot of butt, I think, at that time.
I'm sure he was, but yes. I'm saying, I wonder if it's different then when there was more plausible deniability is what I'm saying.
Like,
but maybe there wasn't. There wasn't.
Fox was just as horrific. You had John Gibson writing books about the war on Christmas, for God's sakes.
But who cares? If the war on Christmas is just nonsense.
Well,
it's not
I mean,
as direct
look,
as, like,
I guess, I guess.
It's like, body cameras while they murder you people, whatever. That's not like that's like Mr. Trump. I'm just using your logic.
Jesse Waters so excited that he's come up with that metaphor.
Yeah, I think standing sitting next to like a belligerent young racist moron who literally, as you said, got his bones by like harassing like Chinese immigrants.
So what is it, the year of the dragon?
Yeah, exactly. Versus like, yeah, I don't know, some like drunk like former local newscaster just like, hey, you know, it's like you can't say Christmas anymore. All right, whatever. Let's go to Cipriani.
It's possible though that he's probably questioning like, my career trajectory. I didn't know I'd have to wrap it up this way. All right, folks, going to take a quick break. When we come back, Michael Schur. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a pleasure to welcome back to the program the senior national correspondent for I-24 News, which you can find on the interwebs and I believe also on some cable carriers. And also with the Young Turks, Michael Shore. Michael, welcome back to the program.
Sam, it's great to be on. Yeah, you can find I-24 on certain cables. Spectrum, if you have Spectrum cable, we're on Spectrum, we're on Cablevision, so, and growing.
All right, fantastic. And this, is it French-based?
You know, it's we're based in Tel Aviv, but we're not on the air in Israel yet. And it has a friend. We have a French channel, an Arabic channel, an English channel. The English channel is based in Tel Aviv. We have bureaus in New York, D.C., and L.A. And we cover, you know, news here that has some kind of a hook to the Middle East as well. So, you know, look at through that prism the stories that are happening here as often as we can. And if there's breaking news, we'll cover it that way too.
All right. Well, great. Well, you know, let's start with this because it was at the beginning of the week. It feels like the State of the Union feels like to me, and maybe this is just, my mindset, but it feels like it happened like 5 or 6 years ago. And in fact, it was 3 nights ago. But here is, you were in, we'll just set this up because we got about 45 seconds of one of the reported pieces you did. You were down in Florida. Where in Florida?
I was in northwest Florida, the panhandle, the town of Fort Walton Beach, Florida, the city of Fort Walton Beach. It's where Eglin Air Force Base is. It's a reliably very, very red part of Florida. I did some reporting in Destin as well. So it's in the thick of Trump country is where they wanted me to be. To get a perspective on what those people think of their president and that speech.
And you know what I appreciated about this report, as opposed to like the endless pieces coming from the New York Times, there was no feigned surprise. Like, wow, this is like, I can't believe these people are still with them. You just made it clear. This is a very, very conservative place. And then basically just let these people speak for themselves, which, all right, well, let's play the clip and then we'll talk about this because, wow.
He's bringing people together. He's exactly. Making us proud to be an American. He's making us want to hold our head high like we used to do before Obama was in office.
Nowhere was Donald Trump's message of making America great again bought into with greater fervor than this solidly far right area in the far left of Florida's panhandle.
I never bought into America wasn't great, but I'm seeing that, you know, our First Amendment rights are being put into the forefront and people are realizing that really the power lies in the people. And I think Trump empowers the populace.
As the country waits to hear the president's remarks Tuesday evening, the folks at Joe and Eddie's restaurant in Fort Walton Beach, Florida, are pretty happy with what they've heard so far, flaws and all.
Morally, he's a complete mess. And I find it so funny that the religious right has picked him up as, you know, some kind of example to follow, which we all know he's not. He's a blowhard. He's a New York trash talker. I didn't elect a best friend.
Even Florida transplant John Williams agrees.
He's doing a great job in terms of the economy and getting America back on track. For the last 8 years, we've just been kind of going downhill.
Michael, this, I feel like this video you could also use if you were trying to lobby for more civil education in our system.
May I ask a question? Can I just ask? Hi, Michael. How close do you think that woman was when she said "New York trash talker" to being like, "He's pretty Jewy."
Yeah,
he's a Jew. But
let me just start.
I mean,
all right, go ahead. I mean, give me your sort of like your I don't know. I mean, your reactions to your own piece.
Well, I mean, my reactions are, at this point, listen, these are the people who elected them. It's good to elected them. It's good to check in with them. To feign surprise is foolish because it's not surprising anymore, but it's certainly interesting. And I think it's, you know, the idea that there really are two Americas. There's one woman in that piece who was describing to me what it's like being out. And after Trump was elected, everyone was so much happier and everyone was relaxed and relieved that Obama was leaving and that Trump was going to be in. That's an entirely different reality than the ones that that you and I and Michael and we experience in the big cities in America where we live and where we saw Donald Trump, you know, do very poorly. I think that's eye-opening, and I think it's important for everyone to understand that that dynamic is at play everywhere.
All right. Okay. So we understand that their assessment. I mean, this one woman said that her First Amendment rights had been restored. Did you get a sense of like when she said that? Like, I mean, I have my biased, predisposed notion as to what that means. But did she go through a situation where her First Amendment rights were curtailed in some fashion, and then they've been restored?
She didn't really. Here's the thing. I wasn't there to challenge these people. I was there to kind of listen and share what I was hearing. When I asked her about the First Amendment rights that she was talking about, she basically addressed the fact that people are able to go after the press in a way where they feel free about it. But she didn't articulate it beyond that. She did say she was a libertarian. There was another woman who said that what she had hoped to hear from the president, though she didn't expect to hear it, was that Obama and Hillary Clinton and the FBI cronies would go to jail, and that they would be jailed. These are people who just, are totally removed from the idea of what is, possible in American politics right now. And maybe Trump is changing that a little bit too, but it's, there was a disconnect, but I thought it was better to let people speak and let them be heard. I wasn't there to be an antagonist in this piece.
Fair enough. But I'm curious as to whether or not that woman, who was interested, and that's later in the piece, who was interested in finally seeing Obama and Clinton and the FBI go to jail. If that was like a year and a half ago, let's say, or 2 years ago, if that was her agenda, like it is the end of 2015, let's say, and she's sitting there debating on who she's going to vote for in the Republican primary. And she's saying, my number one agenda is that Obama, Clinton, and members of the FBI go to jail. There seems to have been some type of mutation, in what they were looking for.
Right. I mean, I think when you heard the chorus of Lock Her Up that was led by Michael Flynn, for the first time that I had heard it said by so many people at the National Convention in Cleveland in 2016, it dawned on me then as I first heard it. I was shocked by it. I mean, I'm not naive, but I was shocked to see the number of people that got into that from a U.S. general. And it made me think that you're right, Sam, that these people have been talking this way and sort of idealizing this idea for quite a while, or this notion for quite a while.
All right. So let's. So what do we do with this information? I mean, once we know that there are there's vast swaths of the country who are saying, we're talking about their First Amendment rights have been restored, that they now, maintain hope that finally we will arrest people in the FBI. What do we do with this information?
Well, there are two things there that are interesting. First, I want to ask you, when you asked me, did she talk about her First Amendment rights being restored? When you said you had an idea of what that meant, what did that mean to you?
To me,
we talked about it. My crew and I talked about it afterwards as well.
Well, to me, what that is she feels less uncomfortable saying things that other people would think that she projects out and probably would be politically incorrect. Like, finally, we can talk about all the blacks who are, and I'm not saying she's saying this, any one of these. I would probably say, I could say five things, and I would bet that at least one of them are coming out. You know, the blacks are, finally having to work for their handouts, or the immigrants aren't getting all the freebies that they were getting
Sam,
before.
Careful. You might offend a lot of people listening here.
Or that, like, you know, the transgender people aren't getting to dictate where we go to the bathroom. Like, I don't know that there was any one of those. It's quite possible all three. But that's what I would guess, that she just feels I'm not as embarrassed. And it's like, I don't think there was probably anybody in her own little universe or big universe that was criticizing her for saying that stuff anyways. It's just that now she just feels like, hey, man, I got a seal of approval from the president to be this way.
Right. And, you know, she is a libertarian, that woman, the one we're talking about. She was the youngest person we spoke with, and she was on board with Trump and she went to three or four rallies herself, took road trips to them. She was not the person that you would typically believe was that way, but her libertarian streak, I think, supports exactly what you just said. And to answer your question, what do you do with it? I think it's really important. There was a moment of, who are these people? How did this man win? And I think that, you know, the media, and myself included, did a disservice to people. I saw these people throughout the campaign all around the country when I was covering the election. And I never believed myself, so I'm at fault, that he was going to win. And like so many, I'm in that boat. But I think it's important to hear that these people, that there are other realities than the ones you live in, and to understand where it's coming from. And if you don't like it, what you can do to stop it once you know about it in these anecdotes. And if not, if you support it, then to know that you're supported in different parts of this country, which I think you were probably reassured of if that's your situation anyway, by his election. But I just think that when you hear these personal stories, it's kind of, I don't mean to compare it this way. When you hear about the Holocaust, it's devastating. When you hear Anne Frank's story, it personalizes it, and you can, it makes it more accessible. When you hear these people speak, it makes it more accessible, if still totally unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean,
I understand and empathize with you, and I'm even more terrified. Is that what you're saying?
Right.
I mean, basically, it's like, okay, so let me get what you're saying. If we allow you to ascend to any more power, we should all leave. Is that what you're... now, is there any, short of, I don't know, was there any relevance beyond, let me put it this way, to the extent that I know the State of the Union happened, I vaguely remember it, it was distressing, but I was drinking somewhat heavily. Does it matter? I mean, we're 3 days away. Is there any?
No, it rarely matters. I mean, and then we make such a big fuss over it, like so many things, and it hasn't mattered. I think that I may have said this to you. I don't know if it was off the air or on the air. Harry Enten with 538 did a study, and the average change in approval rating since Jimmy Carter gave this speech until now. Change in the president's approval rating, the average is 0%. I mean, some people went up a few points, some people went down a few points, but it really doesn't end up mattering. And this one, when there was so little substance in this speech, occasionally a president will give you something to bite on and give legislators something to sort of oppose or agree with. There was nothing like that. There was one thing, he talked about $1.5 trillion in infrastructure spending. And nobody was talking about that the next day, but that to me was a big number, and it was the kind of thing that ordinarily you would sit down and talk about. But everyone moves on to the next shiny object. We all have the attention.
Well, no one takes his proposal seriously anyways, I think. I mean, for me, the most disturbing part was the cabinet saying that the cabinet secretaries can fire and hire at will, which basically is part of the assault on the administrative state, right? We're going to have no civil service. There's going to be no protections for people who are working from the government. We're going to completely politicize everything. We're going to run this stuff like an autocrat or, Once you know you get into power, you can lard it up with political cronies. There'll be no sort of professional functions of the government anymore. And that,
right?
I mean, that I think is a big agenda item. I mean, well, let me ask you this, because we
let me answer that. Yeah. It's a big agenda item. It's also, I mean, it's also smart, maybe smart politics on their side, because civil service reform is not something, I mean, that hasn't been sexy since probably Rutherford Hayes did it in the 1870s. I don't think this is something that people are going to say, oh, you know, it's not going to raise the ire. And they're picking on a couple of things that don't. They probably should, but they don't. And so because of the way social media directs us into what we should be interested in this, you know, in this, as we're kind of feeling our ways around it still, I think that, you know, maybe that's smart politics. It's worked for him as a candidate, and, you know, it seems as an administration, they're not going to waver from that at all.
Yeah, and that's not, I mean, that is not that terribly different than sort of longtime Republican conservative messaging, right? Like,
right.
You know, Grover Norquist was saying this stuff 10, 15 years ago. You know, these in the wake of the financial crisis, at the very least, all you heard about was how unfair it was that people working public sector still have pensions, essentially.
Right, right. No, that's right. That's right. You know, government is the problem. I mean, is Ronald Reagan's motto, and these people are still, you know, inhaling the fumes of his presidency.
So, all right. One thing that occurs to me in the wake of a State of the Union like that is when you look at some of these senators from places like West Virginia, Heitkamp, Donnelly, McCaskill, I guess. I mean, Tester, how much, I almost feel like this has already been unwound on some level, but how much does his ability to deliver a heavily medicated speech put pressure on them to break over something like the government shutdown, right? Because if he comes off as a ranting lunatic, so much of this is performative and process, and not even process. It's really like, it's just like, it's performative of process. It's like almost like three times removed from substance. That seems to impact those senators. And the only reason why I think it's somewhat unwound is because I feel that the more that this, they talk investigations, the more it sort of cleaves, you know, guys like Joe Manchin from having to stick with Trump, right? Because they can still sort of project like Manchin did during the tax fight. Like, I'm gettable. It's just that these guys are just acting, you know, their performance is really just off-putting. And it seems to me that, like, the investigations, all this hype about the memo is actually going to help maintain, to the extent that there is, some sort of party discipline in terms of the Democrats.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's a lot there, but I think you're right. I mean, I think that the dynamic, in Manchin's case, I think his is different than the others, just because of his prominence, the fact that he kind of is the only Democrat in his state that could, in my opinion, prevail. I know there are people challenging him who would differ with me. I don't think a Democrat, you know, in 2018 can win in West Virginia unless it's Joe Manchin. So I think it's a little different. He can chart his own course. But with the others, I think you're right. And I think that the notion that the memo and the investigations and it is forcing this party to stick together is true. You know, a lot of people criticize Nancy Pelosi all the time. I do too sometimes, but I think this has been her best performance as the leader of her party, because she's been able to keep an otherwise fractious group of people together almost without fail throughout the Trump presidency for a year. And I think that's unbelievable in sort of, and without Democratic precedent, while the Republicans go in the other direction. I mean, even today, Mark Meadows is saying, no, there's no way we're going to support any kind of government shutdown. What does that mean? You know, how in the world can they get the House of Representatives to not support shutdown? And what does that do to Trump's agenda? And so I think there's some currency in letting the Republicans be the ones who do that. Now, of course, generally the Democrats find a way to self-destruct anyway, and that remains to be seen. But I don't know that the speech, though, itself, getting back to the core of your question, I don't know how much it affects it in the long run, because, like you said, it seems like such a long time ago, which just also explains if this speech was on Tuesday and it's now Friday and it feels as it does, what is this speech going to feel like in November, right?
Right. I mean, well, of course.
It's an eternity from now, yeah.
All right, wait, so did you say that Meadows said that he doesn't know how to avoid a government shutdown? Or mm-hmm.
How to support one. Like, they don't know that they can support a government shutdown. And if that's the case, another continuing resolution. Sorry, not a shutdown.
Okay.
Support another continuing resolution, which would by default mean a shutdown. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah, so it's the opposite. They don't know how they can avoid a government shutdown because they're not going to vote for a continuing resolution. All right. Well, then.
Yeah, that's right. I misspoke. I'm sorry.
Okay. Sorry. So, yeah, I mean, that's and that makes sense. And that means that there's going to be some desire, theoretically, or pressure on Paul Ryan to try and get some Democratic votes for this. And of course, the Democrats hopefully will be holding out for, at the very least, some type of relief for DACA folks. But let me ask you this.
Right.
And I think, you know, largely speaking, I agree with you in terms of Nancy Pelosi, in terms of what she's done in holding that caucus together. I don't think that she's particularly good at the sort of broad strategizing, frankly, that, let's say, you know, I think Harry Reid was a little bit better at. And I think it becomes more obvious because I think Chuck Schumer's horrible at it. What's your take on Schumer?
You know, I agree with you on all of that. I think that I also think that Pelosi's brand is at the point now where any kind of strategizing she does is almost impossible because of the way she's been branded, and it makes it very difficult for her to get anything done that way. And it's not her fault necessarily. Part of it probably is, but I, you know, when you go to Chuck Schumer, I think it's too early to read this. I know that that Chuck Schumer is probably not as good as Harry Reid at this job. Minority leader is very different. I think he would probably be a better majority leader than a minority leader. And I'm not answering your question because I don't know. I mean, if he played this shutdown thing, and let's talk about his most recent stand of allowing the government to reopen on the promise of Mitch McConnell, if he played that right, will know that he actually, you know, he won his first hand. If he didn't, then it doesn't bode well for the rest of his tenure in this position. And maybe other Democrats are going to feel that way as well. They went along this time and it didn't work. But let's see. I think we have to just wait and see what happens on immigration, on what Mitch McConnell comes back with, and whether or not he's able to sway some people. I thought that Chuck Schumer was going to have an easier time getting, with Trump as president, getting the Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski gang along with him more than he's been able to, because I knew that they have working relationships. And the fact that he hasn't, I would say, is sort of one of the underrated disappointments of his tenure so far.
I think they're, you know, the biggest error they made was to punt on the government shutdown or the budget, I guess, when was this? In early December. Right. They basically
mid-December. Yeah.
It's basically like, let me do your errands for you while you go out and steal my, rob my house.
Right. I think that the timing and it sounds trite, but I think that the holiday timing of things like that always, whenever it's happened before, I remember reading it back in December, that Congress has always veered away from any kind of major statements around Christmas for whatever reason. Well, I mean, I guess the reasons are obvious, but they're not important enough to do that. And so I think you're right. I think that that's one of those situations. I think he's going to be most judged not on that, though I agree with you, but I think it's going to be on what happened, you know, last a few weeks ago and what will happen next week.
Let's just talk briefly about the memo. The memo is going to be released this afternoon, I guess. I'm not sure at what time.
Correct, yeah. Well, I mean, the Washington Examiner and Fox News already have.
I think it's already released.
Oh, it's been released?
It's been released.
Yeah, it's been released, yeah.
Oh, and, okay, so now that it's been released.
It's like the Pentagon Papers for dumb people.
What do we know? I mean, what is it, What does it say? Well, has somebody read this?
We know the president was at. It was the Washington Examiner, and Fox News got a hold of it before anybody else did. Somehow, it's surprising. Byron, you were going to break down on it.
Oh, you're getting you get whatever's going on. You got to just hold the phone in one place, or the satellite is going to stop.
Is that working?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, it's good right there.
Okay, I'm sorry. So the Washington Post, the Washington Times, and the Fox News got it already. In any the thrust of it is that, you know, that they went on a FISA order and the Steele dossier in getting the FISA order to follow Carter Page. Carter Page, it should be known also, in 2013, before Donald Trump was even a candidate for president, had a surveillance order on him as well. And the question is whether or not that the Steele dossier was something to have been relied upon because of the way that it was funded. The president was asked in the Oval Office today whether or not, wherever he was, I shouldn't say, I don't know if it was the Oval Office or if he's in West Virginia, I just don't know. He was asked whether or not he has confidence in Rosenstein, Rod Rosenstein, the deputy AG, and he said, we'll let you figure that out, which wasn't a nod of approval at all. I think the big story out of this might be that there's no story. If there's no there, then it hurts the Republicans. But it's obviously too early.
I mean, I'm just amazed that the focus of this memo is about Carter Page. I mean, it's just sort of like
it's Carter Page as as the target of an investigation or surveillance. Because he was a Trump wacky, because of the Steele dossier, which they say was funded by the Clintons. So there's a trail that's being woven there. And, you know, the Steele dossier, to say that it was directly funded by the Clintons is totally off base. So that's what they're trying to do, is trying to muddy the water. They're trying to get the Mueller investigation to be less popular among the American people than it already is. And as much as they can do that, it gives him reason to sort of, you know, either go after Mueller, get rid of Mueller, or at least Republicans on the Hill to say, this is a witch hunt.
It's just amazing to me because you do have Carter Page is a guy who was investigated before anybody contemplated Donald Trump running, or at least, you know, in any serious fashion. You also don't want Carter Page in the news much. Because
why? I don't get that. He's very really, effective on television. What are you talking about?
Let me ask you this. I mean, if this is the dud that it appears to be, like if Devin Nunes really just sort of built this up and there's nothing there, what can you do? Do you know anything about Devin Nunes that would explain, like, what is he doing? Like, why is this
nobody, other than he's given Trump cover that he was part of the transition team, that he was, one of John Boehner's favorite up-and-comers, which is why a lot of Republicans were surprised how quickly he adhered himself to Trump, because Boehner didn't say a lot of great things about Trump. I don't know enough about Devin Nunes that would make him, other than the notion that he wanted to reestablish himself at the Intelligence Committee after his he was, I don't know what the best way to describe it was. He had a come up as chair of the Intelligence Committee last year. I think that, you know, this is totally politically motivated to cover the White House. He decided that he wanted to be that person on Capitol Hill for the president before the president took the oath. And he thought that was his opportunity. And, you know, if there's nothing there, it's going to be this could have repercussions among the Republican caucus. In the House.
I hope that everybody who voted in favor of releasing this memo is basically just the idea of like them getting embarrassed or shamed, but just hassled. You know, that's basically what I think is really the currency here. It's just how many questions am I going to have to answer that I don't have an answer for?
But isn't this the same?
Well, that's it. You know, he's going to have to answer them now. He's going to be out there, and he's not going to have the answers for them. The other thing is, it's so convoluted, this thing. I don't know what kind of resonance it has with people. But, you know, the crowd that I was watching the State of the Union with, you know, they love the catchphrases. They say release the memo. They didn't get it. They say Benghazi still, you know. So if they have these catchphrases that to them mean something, but they can't describe exactly what they mean. And maybe that's all he needs. But the American people aren't going to understand the Steele dossier. And you know, I'm not demeaning them, but who has the time to look into what the Steele dossier is, who funded it, what Fusion GPS is? And I mean, we do that for a living, but not everybody does. And
right.
But if you put a cloud of doubt over Robert Mueller, maybe that's enough.
I will say this.
There are people. I think that's a good point that I was trying to make, that in that room in Florida, this is going to have a ton of, you know, resonance. But
well, yes.
Obviously, but I don't really think outside of it, especially well, that's the thing. There's nothing to it.
Well, that's the thing, is that, but do those people in that room need anything more to be aligned with them?
I mean, they need the constant. I think it's almost like the reason the research on why we check our iPhones all the time. They keep getting some type of dopamine hit, fresh outrage.
Okay, let me put it this way. Let me put it this way. The best case scenario for this stuff is that they're maintaining the current addicts and giving them sort of like some Soylent Green so that their motors still run and their metabolism still goes at the same pitch. But it's coming at the expense, I think, of just about everything else. I mean, and so the
but that is how you won, right?
Well, yes.
To some extent.
Yes. I mean, but at one point you start burning your own, you know, muscle and sinew as opposed to
getting
just
high on your own supply.
Exactly. But and let me just take some exception with your hesitation to deride the American people. I think if there's anything that this era has told us is that I think there's a certain amount of derision that we need for this country that is deserving. I mean, it's not just a question of, I mean, the only thing I can think about as people are cheering for release the memo and clearly have no idea what it is. And because nobody has any idea what it was until like a couple hours ago. The only thing I can think of is like it is almost I feel a certain amount of remorse that I haven't made the effort to exploit these people financially with like some type of release the memo tchotchkes or,
right,
you know, Benghazi baseball caps. I mean, because I'm on Donald Trump's email list and I'm getting, you know, somebody signed me up as cuck. So I get these emails that always start with like, cuck, this is a great opportunity for you to buy like a MAGA hat, or cuck, you're never going to believe.
There's always going to be another memo. Don't worry.
I mean,
don't worry, Jew boy.
Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, you're right. And maybe I was being too kind, but I don't like, you know, to say that people wouldn't understand it because I'm not, you know, that much smarter than a lot of people. And I kind of get it now, but it's just that people don't take the time to look at this stuff. And we do. And the tribalism dictates that they don't anymore. All you have to do is say, you know, I'm in.
I'm not as concerned about people not taking the time to look into this stuff because they don't have it. I'm concerned about people being as fervent about things that they know nothing about.
The allegiance, the blind allegiance, is really the most disturbing part of it. At the State of the Union, I asked one woman, I said, is there anything that Donald Trump can say tonight, this is before the speech, which will cause you to lose your support for him? Anything in the world? I let her say anything. She said, no, there's nothing he could do or say.
Black people are human beings and we should respect them.
Right. So I think there's an element of that, too, that when you get something that's good for your team, even if you don't know what it is, great.
Well,
Mexicans aren't rapists.
Michael Schur.
Footballing.
People should check you out on I-24. You can find it online. Just Google I-24 and you'll find it. And, of course, I think everybody knows where the TYT is.
That's right.
No, I don't know what that's from. Michael Schur, always a pleasure. Thanks, man.
Thanks, guys.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. Maybe we should have, I know we have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song, but maybe old Matt might want to start off a segment with it since it's been a long time. I don't know if he's heard a Jimmy Reefer Cake tune in a long time. But let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll be talking to Matt Binder of Cafe.com. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. WrestleMania music. And you know what that means. We got the WWF WrestleMania logo up right now. I think we're probably going to get chastised a little bit because it's not up to date. But ladies and gentlemen, it is a pleasure to bring back to this program for at least a brief segment, Old Matt, or otherwise known as Matt Binder. He is a senior video producer at Cafe.com, host of the new podcast Doomed, which is burning
Doomed
up the
with Matt Binder.
Doomed with Matt Binder, which is burning up the iTunes charts.
Well, it's falling off now, but
oh, is it? Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Now, Matt, where are you? Where are you? What's going on with the phones today? Why? What's where everybody's phones stink?
Why do I not sound good? Do I not sound good?
Yeah, are you like on a speakerphone?
No, I'm on. I got like my my headphones on, and I'm using the mic that's connected to the headphones.
All right, try doing it without the mic that's connected to the headphones.
All right, let me try. Give me 1 second.
Sure.
No one has a landline anymore.
What is it? Say again.
How's this? Is this better?
Sounds almost identical, but a little bit better. All right. Well, now, Matt, before we get into what you've been up to, because we got a lot to talk about, we thought we would save the Jimmy Reefer Cake song of the day so that you could hear it, because it's been so long since you had the opportunity to hear a Jimmy Reefer Cake Friday song. I mean, except for your, you know, I know your family gets together and listens to the show, but I don't know if it's on Friday. So here is, what is the Jimmy Reefer Cake song of the week?
It's called Trumpy.
Trumpy. Here it is.
He took 50 bullets and he dipped them in pig's blood. And he had his men load his rifles and he lined up the 50 people and they shot 49 of those people. And the 50th person, he said, you go back to your people and you tell them what happened. And for 25 years, there wasn't a problem. Okay? 25 years, there wasn't a problem.
The mother of all bombs, 4 miles the ground is shaking. The violence causes silence. We must be mistaken. It's the same old theme since 2003 on TV. WMD drama with the tanks and their bombs and their bombs and their drones in your head, in their head. Where was Obama? In your head, in your head. Zombie, zombie, zombie. What's in your head? In your head. Zombie, zombie, trumpet. Obama, Obama.
I was elected to end wars.
Obama,
Obama. To end wars. To end wars.
Another head hangs slowly, child is slowly taken. And the violence caused such silence, who are we mistaken? It was GWB, now it's Donald Trumpy. In your head, there is trauma. With their tanks and their bombs and their bombs and their drones in your head. What went wrong with Obama? In your head, in your head. Trumpy, zombie, trumpet. What's in your head? In your head. Trumpy, zombie, zombie. Obama, Obama.
I was elected. Dan
Wars. Oh my God.
Dan Wars.
Obama, yeah. Dolores O'Riordan, rest in peace.
He better not do any songs when any musicians I respect die.
There you go. There it is.
That was definitely a Jimmy Reefer Cake song.
That was. Of course, Dolores O'Riordan, lead singer of the Cranberries, died. I guess it was this week or maybe last week.
She must have been pretty young, right?
Cranberries 40, 45.
Oh, damn.
Maybe 45. I don't know.
Oh, that sucks.
40s. 40s. Well, there it is.
All right. Thanks, Matt. Everybody subscribe to your podcast. Take care.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right. Well, so let's see, moving on. There was definitely some things to commend in that song.
The melody was pretty nice.
What's that?
The melody was pretty nice. Yeah. I don't know how he came up with that.
I like the idea that he went zombie Trumpy, zombie Trumpy.
Well, he included the chords in the email in case I want to play this tonight.
Gonna learn that on the uke. Matt Binder. So, okay. Fill us in on the podcast. You've launched it. It's called Doomed. What do you cover on this?
Basically, politics and culture, where I'm looking at, from a leftist perspective. There's not, not many podcasts out there that do that, right?
No.
But I think I have a expertise in a certain area, the way like your expertise is Social Security and Michael Brooks's expertise is the complete history of the politics of every continent, of every country on the continent of Africa. My expertise is these right-wing conspiracies. So that's where I tend to focus on.
Now, I will say this, that I remember years ago, you were like, I'm going to, on Matt and Mike Mondays, you're like, I'm going to cover this dude who's an MRA. And I'm like, a what? Like a men's rights advocate. And he's a pickup artist. And I'm like, what? And he's like, oh, yeah, he got his money. I just remember this, like just hearing this out of like the corner or barely paying attention to it. The guy's actually a men's rights advocate, but he made his money basically from alimony from his wife. And I didn't pay much attention to it until the guy ends up at the White House and his name is Mike Cernanovich or Cernovich.
Mike Cernovich. MikeCernovich.com.
So you
Yeah, that's the guy. In fact, that said his name, that describes a lot of them. So I was wondering where you were going with that, who exactly you were talking about.
Right. Well, so just tell us, you've been following Cernovich for years, right?
Yeah. Basically, he was I first became aware of him when, Gamergate really took off. This was like, late 2014. And this guy, Mike Cernovich, saw what was going on and decided to basically use these impressionable Gamergate guys to jump off his career. And he saw that this guy, Sam Biddle, who's now a writer for The Intercept, but at the time he was with Gawker, he tweeted out, in a joking way that we should bring back bullying, and ultimately Gamergate is reaffirming what we've known to be true for decades. Nerds should be constantly shamed and degraded into submission. Which
Michael approves.
Which Michael tweets out unironically every now and then. But
yeah, totally unironically.
But so Mike Cernovich sees this and he decides, I'm gonna go after this guy and make a video where I challenge Sam Biddle to a boxing match for charity in the name of anti-bullying. And he became this big Gamergate hero. And from there, his name just grew. And when this all happened, I was like watching this video and I'm saying to myself, okay, look at this guy. There's no way this guy is anti-bullying. Just look at him. So I checked his Twitter profiles and all the stuff he had out there. And the dude is not a shocker to everyone. He does not care about bullying very much.
Right.
He was very much a bully himself back in the day and today too. But especially when he was a nobody, he would tweet at random people and just say horrible things, telling them to go kill yourself. And of course, his most famous tweets are the ones where he says that date rape doesn't exist. He tweets that Trayvon Martin got before he could rape anyone. Things like that. All around good guy,
Now, what do you have any insight into his attempted purchase of Gawker now?
I do not. I mean, he definitely has money and he's been able to crowdfund. I don't know if you know this, but he actually was able to get a crowdfund for a documentary, and he's created that documentary, and it is on Amazon Prime, I believe. So this guy is trying to make...
What's it about? Is it a pickup artist one or...
No, it's like his media criticism documentary or whatever.
It's like I'll double dip. Noam Chomsky for the ultra stupid.
He trying to beat us to the punch?
Yeah, I mean he pretty much he did. It's called Silenced, and it's his little documentary on the state of free speech in the United States of America.
Ah.
Yeah.
Because the government has what? Has cracked down on his free speech? Do people is there some type of litmus test, or is there some type of like literally initiation test that you can only be a conservative right winger if you don't understand what the First Amendment is?
I think so. That's probably really what the initiation is.
Got to crack down on CERNVich.com.
Once they could confirm.
Do you think
No, go ahead.
Do you think he initially was going to make it about Sam, but couldn't dig up enough dirt on him?
Probably. I mean, I would probably
would all be clips.
The poster
from,
for it is
the
Statue of Liberty, like holding her mouth shut. So I'm assuming that would have been Sam's place,
right,
where the Statue of Liberty is sitting.
You shut up.
But yeah, he's got real big names for the documentary. You know, Anthony Cumia. Alan Dershowitz,
of course.
Gavin McGinnis, the guy who created Dilbert. I mean, real big name.
Oh, the guy who created Dilbert. See, that's a good. Are you tracking him, Matt? Because that guy is
real,
a freak.
Real big name.
Yeah, he's a.
No,
he's
an ultra weirdo. No, seriously. Have you
oh,
been,
yeah.
He's like a. Are you following him, Matt?
Yes, I do. Yeah, he's pretty obvious, though. Yeah. But he's definitely
totally obvious.
He's a right winger,
crazy right wing. Yeah. Huh.
What do you mean by obvious? Like which part?
He's low hanging fruit. What I want to know about is
unlike Cernovich.
QAnon. Who's that dude?
Okay. Yeah. All right. So here's the thing. QAnon could be anybody, and it could be
all
1,000 people, a million people. I could be QAnon today. You could be QAnon today. Anyone could be QAnon. Basically, around the fourth quarter of last year. These cryptic messages that the people who are in this conspiracy now call breadcrumbs were being left on 4chan. And basically, this guy who we now know as QAnon, who again could be one person or 100 million people, will leave these breadcrumbs. And all these people who believe in this conspiracy now will parse these breadcrumbs and try to figure out what the secret message is in these breadcrumbs. And this all stems from this, pretty much. Do you remember back in October of 2017 when Trump was having this meeting with a bunch of military people and the press were there and Trump said, "This feels like the calm before the storm"?
Yes, I do remember that. They were all standing up and it was like some type of I feel like there were wives there, too, maybe. Or I can't remember. But yes, I do remember.
I could have been making a marriage joke. I could have been threatening global annihilation. You don't know. And that's what's great about it.
So basically, the calm before the storm is what made all these conspiracy theorists think that it's all related. And Donald Trump was actually giving us a secret message that we don't know what's going on right now, but anytime we hear of something in the world that happened, Donald Trump had something to do with it. Anytime you hear about a Donald Trump failure, we're meant to hear about that failure because it covers what really happened, which was Donald Trump ordering some sort of takeout on some terrible person or uncovering some sort of pedophile ring. Basically, Donald Trump is responsible for anything that they like in the world and any bad guy being taken out. And this QAnon guy, they believe, is either a member of the Trump administration or Donald Trump himself leaving messages to these hardcore Trump fans about what's coming next.
No, he's not.
Oh, wait. Excuse me. I'm on Reddit right now. Just everybody back off. I got to go into my extra. So wait a second. So
Opie's a total loser. He's never been as good as Anthony. That's
so
number
basically
one.
What
number
you're telling
two,
me
pedophile
is
ring.
QAnon is the modern day version of Paul McCartney is dead. And we're just like seeing, like, there's just everybody sort of crowdsourcing, pushing this. I mean, does everybody know what I'm talking about with the Paul McCartney's dead thing?
No.
Oh, okay. So during, what was it, like 1972 or something, there was I Am the Walrus, whatever, I think it was like in Sgt. Pepper's, there were all these subtle supposed hints that Paul McCartney had died in a car accident, and there was a fake Paul McCartney that had taken his place.
Oh, okay, I have heard of this.
And there were all sorts of like hints, and this is sort of sounds like it's like one of those jobbies. And people are just sort of crowdsourcing, pretending to be QAnon to leave these breadcrumbs that ultimately add up to Donald Trump being essentially Bourne, right? Jason Bourne.
Yeah, I mean, yes, pretty much. That's a great way to put it. You know, they're able to turn any, because they're so vague, these breadcrumbs, and there's so many of them, because again, anyone could be writing them. For example, in one of these posts, QAnon references a sky fortress. And they turned it into, later on, when there was a fire in Trump Tower, oh, that must have been the sky fortress he was telling us about. Trump Tower is going to be on fire.
There we go.
He told us in advance. That's how we know.
So it's like...
So anyone can log in as QAnon? I'm still a little confused.
Yeah, here's the thing. Unlike 4chan, you don't have to create you don't create a username or a profile. You just go on the board, an image board, and you just leave whatever. So this QAnon guy, who they basically call QAnon, he could be anybody. Anyone could post one of these breadcrumbs and just sign QAnon.
Okay, well, I think got some afternoon plans ahead for all of us.
I feel like this is dovetailing. Go ahead. I was going to say, I feel like this is dovetailing with the conversation we just had with Michael Shore. Like, how do we put this into some type of sales funnel and make some cash off this?
Well, people like, you know, Mike Cernovich have done that. I mean, for example, like all the major Pizzagate names are behind this. Like all the guys who helped prop up Pizzagate are behind this. Liz Crokin, who was a mainstream journalist, who is easily like one of the crazier of these conspiracy theorists now. She's the one who claims that Sean Hannity is actually in on all this, and he wants to talk about all this on the air, but he's got to play it safe. And, you know, Sean Hannity didn't really do himself any favors when he talked about Seth Rich and all this stuff. So maybe she's right. Maybe she's not a conspiracy theorist.
I think Sean is too dumb to use the computer, but definitely wants to talk about it on air. Do you think, though, Matt, like, I mean, when I studied in Turkey, I remember people, there really was like, especially at that time, there literally was sort of what they say is happening now. There actually was like a coup and counter coup between the government and I guess what you could call the deep state there, essentially the military. And what somebody said to me once was that in Turkey, so many people think in terms of conspiracy theories that it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's like, there actually are a ton of conspiracies happening in this political culture, because even when none were happening, other people were like anticipating things from other people and making them up and then actually creating the thing itself. And do you think like now that all of these people have gone from like, you know, I don't know, like something crazy on 4chan is influencing policy. So now like the thing that you and I are joking about a couple of weeks ago probably is like actually a real thing in some form within a couple of weeks.
Yeah, because okay, for example, take the memo release today. The same guys promoting Pizzagate who moved on to QAnon are now rolling the memo into QAnon, and that's what actually why QAnon is sort of taking off, and people are calling it the next Pizzagate. Because unlike Pizzagate, where it was a set thing, the very sensical belief that there is a underground pedophile ring happening in a pizza place in Washington D.C. that was a very specific thing that, you know, once that dies down, where else can you take it? Whereas this QAnon thing is anything can be part of this conspiracy, because anything can wrap up into it. Anyone could leave this breadcrumb that basically states some sort of vague, poetic looking like line structured thing that he leaves. And people will parse this as, oh, it must mean this. When this thing happens, like, they'll look back and say, oh, that must have been what he was talking about. And the thing is, like, there's like the shelf life on this could keep going.
Right.
The memo is that. Yeah. Like the memo, for example, like in your previous interview, when you were talking to your guest, he was talking about how the big story of this is just going to be that there is no story. But I actually think that if QAnon and these conspiracy theorists continue to run with it, then they will parse this memo and make shit up, just like they did with Pizzagate. And then the things they made up are going to be what people start to believe. Wow. Like, there was a significant amount of people who, you know, believe that there was a pedophile ring going on at this pizza place.
How did that start?
And still do.
All right. So, and this is why I wanted to talk to you about this, because, you know, 4 years ago, I was very skeptical of whether or not, when we talked, when you would talk about men's rights activists or Gamergate or that stuff, like, is this really politics? And then obviously, you know, 3 years later, the guy's, you know, flashing the white power symbol in the White House. So, you know, there's relevance here. And what you're talking about is, it's not even a conspiracy. It's like a conspiracy machine. That is just going to, it's just a function. It doesn't need, it's just one that's going to keep producing the next, like you say, Pizzagate or Benghazi or whatever it is.
Exactly. Like, InfoWars covers this nonstop, because for them, there's nothing to actually cover and there's no end to the information, because they can take QAnon and just make shit up themselves, which without a doubt is what they're doing.
It's almost an ideological rubric in some ways, right? I mean, it's like just sort of the founding principle, and everything then feeds into it and then just gets sputtered out on the other side. And eventually something's going to stick, right? I mean, it seems like nothing's stuck yet from this, except for the process itself. But eventually something's going to stick, and that's what they're looking for, it seems.
Yes, and there's already like people, there's like, if you look online, you can find hundreds of pages, like ebooks that were put together with hundreds of pages that are the complete like guide to all the QAnon breadcrumbs left up to this point. And the person who put the ebook together, parsing each and every line. Oh, could this mean this event? Could this mean that event? And it's like, and for an example of how easy it is to make this shit up is this one's my favorite example. So in November, this random post was put up on 4chan from QAnon. Nothing is random. Everything has meaning. And then the plus sign three times. And then
three times?
Dude, I know who it is. I know who it is. It's Ben Carson.
But then
nailed it.
But then here we go. 7 minutes later, Donald Trump tweets out, "My visit to Japan and friendship with Prime Minister Abe will yield many benefits for our great country. Massive military and energy orders happening." And then the plus sign three times. And so everyone took this as, okay, QAnon is either a member of the Trump administration, and he knew Trump was going to tweet the plus sign three times, so he tweeted it out first as like a wink-wink to all of us who are in on it, or Donald Trump himself posted this. But then if you look further into it, Donald Trump's tweet, the time zone, and the time zone the 4chan image board goes by are not in the same time zone. So Donald Trump actually tweeted his first, and then the guy who says he's QAnon posts this one, knowing the time zone is going to be off, and look like he posted it first.
But you know what's so messed up?
Oh, that's awesome.
You know what's so messed
wait a
up
second,
about
wait
this
a second.
Is that this makes Bender be like
Hold
them.
On one
he
second.
Has to think
Hold
like
on one
them.
Second. That is, I mean, people have to step back and like a round of applause. That's good stuff right there.
I mean, if it wasn't so right-wing and terrible, I think it's kind of a charming folk tradition. Like, ooh, people pass down stories. They pass them around. It's a popular art form.
Now, so what's to prevent us from, when we now know the president is going to be in East Asia in a time zone that is like, I guess, you know, 14 hours apart, from going on 4chan and just wreaking havoc with stuff
yeah.
like this?
Yeah.
Now,
I
let
mean,
me ask you this. If you can real... figure this out, and there are people writing ebooks about QAnon, is it not getting out on 4chan, or is it just we don't want to believe that? And, you know, or do you, or like if that, if your theory hits 4chan, then do you become like some type of, you know, a debunker, like a signal to noise ratio? Like you're sent out by the deep state to muddy
yeah,
the waters.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with these breadcrumbs is that even if you say, like, even if you debunk that, then, oh, that's not what it meant. It wasn't meant to be like a message that we're in on it. And this is like, I knew what Trump was going to say. It must mean something else. It's some way to, like, there's no way to debunk this because it's so vague. And people are just putting what their own belief is on it. And when that belief is destroyed by something like that, then they'll just say, oh, I must have been wrong. I was reading it wrong. It must mean this. And then they have a whole new belief.
So shouldn't
these things, like the breadcrumbs are so vague.
Isn't it time to now acknowledge that Sam Biddle was right?
Yeah. I mean, I always knew he was, but
yes.
So, Matt, how many hours a day are you spending on this?
I mean, with the QAnon thing, it really isn't that much. There's a lot to it, but there's not so much to it in terms of what's out there beyond these message boards. And a lot of people add so much to it with their parsing of the language that it just becomes so muddled. So you'll never really know who is who, if you're following the actual main QAnon message. You could be following something that someone put up to just mess with people, because again, there's nothing stopping Michael from going on 4chan right now and leaving a QAnon message. It's really not that much, because the stuff that's out there is so vague that you read it and you basically just wait to see what people parse from it and then just look at that, how that can't be true, because it's wrong what you're believing from it. There's really no way to disprove the actual QAnon breadcrumbs, because there's nothing there. You could only disprove what people are believing in the breadcrumbs. And then once you disprove that, they'll just believe they were wrong about the breadcrumb and the breadcrumb is telling them something else.
Is this in your mind, the equivalent to the Gamergate or the MRA movement from like 3 or 4 years ago? Is there any other like strains of deviant right wingism that is growing on these boards?
I don't think there's going to be any names to come from this, because the names who are pushing it are pretty much the big names already in that world. You know, InfoWars, Jerome Corsi, Liz Crokin.
Jerome Corsi
isn't
on this QAnon?
Yes, he's hardcore following this. He puts up videos where he parses random ones he decides he thinks he can decode. He's the InfoWars resident QAnon expert, it seems.
Wow.
I have a question for you, Matt. Do you ever get worried that you're like, you know, like an FBI profiler who like follows serial killers, and they get like sort of gradually it breaks their brain and it drags them over to the dark side and they become killers themselves?
The funny thing is,
like, about that?
More like Heart of Darkness of style.
Yeah, Heart of Darkness.
I've been watching a lot of those shows on Netflix recently, the Unabomber one and then Mindhunter. And right. I'm like, whoa.
Here's a question for you. Do you think crypto commies, such as myself when I'm being sneaky, could use this QAnon thing to trick people into having a critique of capitalism? Like, there's
definitely
this small group of people that controls everything in the world, and they influence elections, and they have all the power. Like, wonder who they are.
Capitalists don't want you to kill hookers in
it's
video
definitely
games.
Definitely possible.
Boom.
I mean, the thing is, there's been no like main like timeline to follow. There's been no decoded version of what a QAnon leaves that's taken the mainstream. The closest you could get is what InfoWars thinks something believes. But even then, when you follow these QAnon forums, it's all just like people giving their own, you know, belief of what it could be. And that's sort of why I don't think this is going to blow up to be a Gamergate where the mainstream media covers it, because I think it's just way too confusing. But I do think this is going to be a feeding ground that keeps every conspiracy, like the memo, for example, going much longer than it would have if this whole QAnon thing wasn't there.
Well, it seems to me it's like an incubator. Right. Like they're just going to keep rolling conspiracy theories through. And then one is going to hit. And if you've got people like Jerome Corsi and these others who are magnifying it, they're the ones who are going to mainstream it. At one point, one of them is going to hit, because it's going to have all the elements the plus signs are going to be, you know, actually legit or whatever it is. And the thing is going to metastasize. And pretty soon Devin Nunes is going to be, you know, raising it in the Intel committee. And, you know, they'll get the next Trey Gowdy to do a year and a half worth of committee hearings on it or something. I mean, that's where it's going to come from, right? I mean,
if you think about where Pizzagate came from, it was basically WikiLeaks released these Podesta emails, and a bunch of people got together and were like, these pizza toppings mean different forms of like molesting children, and that's how it took off. They literally just made it up. Now what I wonder about is, if this QAnon thing existed before Pizzagate, could people have just said, oh, maybe we misread it and it wasn't Comet Pizza, it's another pizza place, and we could have had an armed guy go to pretty much every pizza joint in the country until they found something which
well,
they never
would
have
found. Yeah, I mean, obviously you can't just give up if it's, I mean, you got it. Pedophilia is a big deal.
Pizzagate can't fail you. You can only fail Pizzagate.
Exactly. Can I make a recommendation slightly off topic, but I just want to make sure I get this in. Everybody should watch, and I don't think he's really on the map anymore, or maybe I just don't know because I'm not hanging out with Matt every day, but Matt also debated this guy, I think his name was Paul Elam, who was like architect, and it was the funniest thing because Matt was like, hey, you know, I'm going to have this debate with this crazy guy, and I don't know, like, you know, let's hang out in the studio and prep or whatever, and I was like, believe me, you're going to be fine, and we did, and he did this debate, and the whole time the guy's like, Mr. Bender. That's all I can remember is he kept addressing Matt in this very formal debate style. And yes, Sam and I the whole time, just to really underscore, we're all like, all right, Matt, whatever. I think we'll attend to the crisis in Saudi Arabia instead. And this is nonsense.
Oh, and
meanwhile, like 4 years later.
Yeah, 4 years later, incidentally,
these people
he's
run.
Now the Secretary of Treasury.
Exactly. It's like, hey, Treasury all those Secretary. Random people I was following, he's actually now the head of Health and Human Services, the guy that said rape hadn't technically been committed since 1975. He's on the Trump transition.
Where is that guy now?
Which guy? Paul Elam?
Yeah.
Elam.
Yeah, he still runs a voice for men. He's totally fallen off. Like, he still is a name in the MRA world, but he definitely didn't take his cues from Cernovich, and I guess he's thinking maybe he should have.
He didn't embrace the full package because the guys who embraced it, they connected you can't get laid to, like, immigration, and they did the Bannon thing. He must have just stayed with, like, you know what? I really, really hate family court, and that's what I'm sticking
right.
to.
That's pretty much what happened, yeah.
Here's a question. I'm really fascinated by this, and it's so frustrating for me because these people are, like, partly right when you listen in a vague way, like, yeah, there's this group of people that controls everything, and you should question what you read in the media. And then they veer way off course. Like, how much of that is coming from, like, some sort of late capitalist dissatisfaction or rage?
No, it definitely is. I mean, how can you tell someone that distrusts the media, which you rightfully should, and should question certain things because they obviously have agendas too? Like, how do you tell them, like, oh, you're wrong because I read this in the New York Times or Washington Post? Which is why I think, you know, progressive leftist media is so important because it's a way to say, listen, you know, we're not the mainstream, we're alternative media, but we're going to, like, show you what we found from our research and what we looked up and our facts, and we're going to show you how the right-wing guys are wrong too, and that you're just falling into this hole where they're just taking advantage of you. They want your money, so they'll give you what you want to hear. You don't have to go listen and believe the mainstream media. You don't have to listen to those guys either, but, you know, you should not just say this alternative media is factual because they're not saying what the mainstream media is saying.
You know, I mean, the thing is that this dynamic is not even remotely new. I mean, it is. That's why, like, I don't think this
the newness probably comes with the internet. Right?
The newness comes with the internet, but the dynamic itself, I think you can trace to early stage capitalism. I mean, this is something that's been going on for a long time, where, you know, there's these alternate universe stuff that has been going on, where people, you know, so much of this, I think, is, and there's some of this on the left too. I mean, certainly it's not as, I think there's not as much money to sort of incubate these things.
Because you're a fucking coward.
Well, exactly. But I'm not just thinking about that, dude. But like, look, there's this desire, and I think it gets more and more pronounced. And this is even like, maybe I'm giving too much credit to what's going on with QAnon, because it's quite possible that it's just like somebody stumbled on like, hey, man, I can actually just create a conspiracy mill, and eventually one of these things are going to hit. But part of it is also is just the more advanced our society becomes, and the more ideas that are out there, and that more ideas that people have to parse, the greater the desire for an answer that explains everything. And particularly, and I think to a certain extent, religion used to serve this function for a lot of people. It still does. But it's nice. I mean, you know, any type of orthodoxy, which basically answers every question for you, takes a lot off of your plate.
I would also recommend.
That's why I wear the same pair of pants every day.
Yes.
Is because I want an arena where I don't have to think.
I want an arena where I don't have to think.
I grab the pants. I know my wallet's in there. I know my keys are. I don't have to think about that.
Watch,
yeah, that's why I'm a communist.
Watch Pat Buchanan's 1992 Republican Party address. Look at Ron Paul's newsletters from the 1980s. I mean, the culture is totally different. And I think the way the conspiracies spread and the grievances, like, Matt's totally on top of like how it's moving. But I think the basic story structure, there's nothing new about it. I agree. And you could look at those concrete examples.
There's one thing that I've been thinking about that's been basically based on, you know, one or two of these politicians who are currently in office. And I keep thinking about this guy, Matt Gaetz, that rep from Florida who brought Chuck C. Johnson to the State of the Union.
Yes.
Now, this guy, he sourced an anti-Clinton amendment, like an official resolution from a Reddit subreddit, the Donald Trump like fan forum. He had a staffer crowdsource ideas for this resolution and officially like put it forward. And now what I'm thinking is, what's to stop a guy who's in tune with how these right wing conspiracy theorists think and is just a craven politician? What's to stop him from logging in as QAnon and putting something out there that would benefit him?
Nothing.
It's like he could do that.
Nothing. I mean, maybe somebody just got the idea right now, or maybe they're just doing it. I mean, or you know, I would imagine a guy like that is like a Chuck C. Johnson ends up doing it. That's the way, you know, like, hey, Matt, thanks for taking me to the State of the Union. Guess what? We're going to work this thing. I mean, that's what's going on here.
It was actually a pizza place in Georgetown and sent.
As an aside, definitely always call him Chuck C. Johnson, because he's trying to rebrand as Charles Johnson. Don't do that. He's Chuck.
All right. Chuck C. Johnson it is. Well,
Charles gives him way too dignified of a name.
Ginger neckbeard bastard.
Matt, how's the kid?
He's doing good. He's 2.5.
Oh, my God.
And he's like a real boy now. Like, he does real things. Like, he is into certain shows. He's into certain, like, toys and
Monster
stuff like
Energy
that.
Drink.
How much soda does
monitoring
he drink?
4chan.
We don't have him drinking soda, actually.
Really? What's going on?
When are you going to let him go on the internet, if ever?
When he already actually is addicted to the YouTube Kids app. We try to monitor that and keep that time on there to a minimum.
Oh my God,
we
that
have
is,
like a timer.
See,
that
it is on. Not, it is not all nurture. There's definitely nature there. Of course, Bender's son.
Another thing with the YouTube Kids app and what's on YouTube and what these, like, we've had to block certain videos where we're like, how are they showing this to kids? Like, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, well, there's a whole
industry that's churning out like disturbing videos that like children are addicted to for some reason.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, we were talking about that a couple of weeks ago. I guess there was a big YouTube crackdown.
What
on
are
it.
They?
They basically will like take like a brand named character like Peppa Pig, or like, I don't know, one of the
Paw Patrol guys.
One of Paw Patrol guys, or yeah. and they'll take those characters and put them in like their own story, like some like, you know, CGI team from like India or China who are cheap, but they really have no idea what they're creating. And they, you know, they do disturbing things. Like there was one video I caught that I had to just shut off was one of the Paw Patrol guys was sick. And so the doctor cut the Paw Patrol guy open and took out his guts.
God.
That's horrible. That's so
and like
up.
kids see like the Paw Patrol character and they're like, I guess like they don't notice the difference. They can't tell between like the good quality Paw Patrol that's like the real thing and this like off brand, like third party Paw Patrol. So it's like they don't see the difference.
The Chinese are ruining Paw Patrol.
And then Dave Rubin gets on and starts complaining about why they've demonetized those. That's my understanding of how that works.
Okay, I like normal Paw Patrol, but I don't have a problem with the alternative. Why would people be so scared of that?
Hey, YouTube, why are you demonetizing? Why are you demonetizing the first 30,000 hits of Chase,
you know,
on the case getting disemboweled?
Put that up, even if YouTube like allows that stuff on YouTube, why is that on the YouTube Kids app where they're supposed to be like the safe alternative for parents to let their kids watch
Maybe
YouTube?
So they don't raise snowflakes.
Matt, where can people find out more about Doomed?
Doomedpod.com.
Doomedpod.com. And where can people watch your vids? What are you doing over there at cafe.com?
Cafe is like working in a transition period. We have Pre-Barara has a big podcast on our network. So that's the main thing right now.
Okay. Sounds good. All right, folks. Matt Bender, thanks so much, Matt. Great to talk to you, buddy.
Great to talk to you guys, too. Take care, everybody.
Bye, Matt.
Bye.
All right, folks. Going to take a quick break. Head into the fun half of the program, wherein we will be looking at a wonderful video of ICE officers asking people on Amtrak for their papers. There's also a great video that Jimmy Kimmel did. those focus group videos that CNN does where they go back and talk to the Trump voters and this and that. This is like that, but about 50 times better. It's sort of funny, but it's really more just disturbing. And then Jesse Waters making an argument about P-tapes. And we're going to visit in on get an update on that Arizona State Senate member, Don Shooter. He was the one who did some type of dance with a camera for a local news guy when he was asked about the sexual harassment charges. Don Shooter. You know what would have been the proper song for this? Would have been Shooting Star by Bad Company.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
But all right, folks. We're going to take a break. Head into the fun half. 646-257-3920. Don't forget, you can become a member of this program at jointhemajorityreport.com. If you do not have the financial means to become a member, but you do want access to the fun half of the show, we're, as always, way behind on our emails, but send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Give us a while. We will get to it, I promise, and we will work something out for you. We do not keep anyone out of the fun half for financial reasons. All right, quick break. Be right back.
You are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy, back. And the alpha males are back. Back.
Just as delicious as you could imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 boy, back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back, 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 back.
Almost as what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman.
And the alpha males are back, back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Danner's song?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Danner.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, folks, fucking reminder.
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are...
Psych. Fuck them. Fuck them.
Almost says what?
What?
Almost says what?
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are black, 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 black. And the Africans are black, 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 black. African. And the alpha males are black, 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 black. And the Africans are black, 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 black.
Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100. You can't knock the hustle.
Come on!
Fuck them! Fuck them! Fuck them! Fuck, fuck, fuck.
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are back, back. Africans are black.
Pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy. Total, pussy, total, pussy, total, pussy, total. Pussy, 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 pussy.